that.
Let's try to now expand on some of the points that we've laid out and also try to add a few. So let's take a step back. We had talked about the question of whether the chiyuv of chinuch is on the father and the mother or just on the father. And we had some conflicting sources to that extent. On the one hand, our sugya, we still do have a sugya that we're calling ours, that we started with in the beginning of sukkah. How does that seem to imply regarding the mother's role in chinuch? Mother's involved. And really it sounds like it's a full-fledged obligation, because the Gemara considers that maybe it wouldn't be kosher only if we assume that, well, it's a drabanan because of the chinuch, and maybe she didn't pay attention, Hilmi Amalke didn't pay attention to dinim drabanan. Implying what? That if she is observant of dinim drabanan, then she should be doing this. So our Gemara really sounds very much like there is a chiyuv here, and that chiyuv is drabanan. Well, yes, sir. Question on that.
You know that the mother has an active role in society.
Okay.
Maybe it seems to be
like. Actually, if you're going to expand on that, maybe let's just mention the other side first, so that we can understand the context of what you're trying to explain. So, on the one hand, there's that. On the other hand, there are some other indications that seem to downplay the role of the mother. The Gemara in Maseches Nazir and Daf Chavtes about a father committing his child to Nazirus. And also the Tosus Yishanim in Yuma, which assumes that only the father is obligated in Chinuch, and that's on the one hand to the exclusion of Bezdin and of others, but also explicitly there to the exclusion of the mother too. And the Tosus Yishanim tries to address a little bit how our Gemara can be looked at in light of that. Okay, now Sammy, take it
away. Yeah, I was going to ask, because sounds like the lashon of the Gemara, if I remember correctly, it was like part of the Sarat Limo. Like the child still needs the mother, but does that mean that the mother, thus like there's an obligation as chal on the mother to go ahead and do certain things, or is it just like, no, maybe there's an element of like, you know, maturation that needs to come from being with the mother, and then eventually, let's say the kid's, you know, the female, whatever it is, where that age is, he seems to separate himself, or she seems to separate herself further enough.
Well, just to clarify, that's a little misleading, because that phrase is the pre-chinuch stage, and the pre-chinuch specifically for the mitzvah of sukkah, which we'll also highlight, that there, somebody who's a katan hatzarich li'imo is not yet ready for the chinuch of sukkah. So I don't know if that tells us anything about the actual chinuch stage. Once the child is in the stage of chinuch, what role does the mother play in that? So it's hard to build too much on that for this purpose. But so we saw that there seems to be a little bit of a conflict between the sources as far as where the mother fits in. And of course, you want to emphasize, and it's important just for us to remember, especially as Mother's Day is approaching in just about 6 months, that we recognize that the tremendously primary role that the mother has in the chinuch, both practically and intentionally as part of the design. So we understand that whatever we're talking about here is going to have to be some kind of a subset of chinuch. There's no question that the mother is clearly charged with and de facto very much the prime mover in the chinuch of her children. So whatever we're talking about here is some type of a subset of the broader chinuch. And we still have to figure out why there should be any limitation at all, if there is limitation. Ariel, you had a comment?
Yeah, I found some comments about that. I was listening to Chamak the other day, that the Rebbe was discussing that, I forgot where this Rashi is, but it seems to hide the fact that Esav was Esav's son, and only
yes.
Where is it?
Oh, no.
But, and he explains the why isn't it hide also the fact that he was Yitzchak's. And he explained off the Rav that the mother has more of a chinuch responsibility.
Okay. Okay, I mean, it's clearly true. There's no question whether it works within that Rashi or not, but it's clearly true that the mother plays an overwhelmingly important role in the raising of observant children. So whatever limitation we're talking about should not be taken out of context and should not be overread. Presumably, there is some kind of subset of chinuch, and we've said from day one that we're assuming that we're going to find out that chinuch exists on a couple of levels. If for no other reason then we're referring to chinuch as a rabbanon throughout, and clearly v'shinatam l'fanecha, etc., etc., there is a clear obligation in HaTorah and Misvara and everything else to be raising observant children. So whatever we're talking about in this discussion is not the whole concept of chinuch with a capital Ches and everything else that's involved in raising children. There's some kind of specific obligation which has to do with the practical imposing of specific mitzvos on pre-major children, on minor children, that may or may not be on the father specifically. So one topic that we started, and I don't think we really fully went forward with it, so I want to just spend a few minutes on it now. So we were at first open to the thought that maybe there's a difference between different mitzvos, and that one difference that can be drawn is that maybe you're only obligated in chinuch towards a child if you yourself are obligated in that mitzvah, which has a lot to be said for it. Unfortunately, it's going to be very unhelpful here if we're dealing with a conflict between the Gemara about Nazir and the Gemara about Sukkah, then our sugyas are lining up exactly the opposite way. Because Nazir, a woman can become a Nazir just as much as a man can, and you have to know that to get into Rosh Chodesh Kolo, but it's the Pasuk mentions them both pretty much equally. While when it comes to Sukkah, which is where we're finding, sounds like there is an obligation, so there, women are peturos. So maybe there's something to be gained from distinguishing between one mitzvah and the next, but it's going to be hard for us to use that basis to say, well, whatever mitzvah you're obligated in, that's where you have chinuch, because that's going to give us exactly the wrong distinction, at least for these two sugyas. So is there another approach we could take? Is there another reason to distinguish between Nazir and Sukkah? Say Nazir, women, mothers don't have an obligation. Sukkah, yes. Is there any other kind of distinction you could draw between the two? Yes, sir. Daniel.
So all the first sugya, it applies to all the males no matter what, but Nazir is only a potential. That doesn't actually, could never necessarily apply.
Okay, so that let's take that and let's run with that. So Nazir could potentially not apply. So what do you want to do with that? It's something to work with.
Reason, like, there's less of a reason why you'd be obligated to teach your children about it. Is it something that you might never, like, they would never have to do? Something like that.
Okay.
Isn't guaranteed, so therefore you have an obligation on something that you know is going to happen. Something that might not necessarily apply. You wouldn't have a chiyuv.
Okay, that's a great start. So let's start with that. So, and let's focus especially on the Nazir part of the equation there. Right, so Nazir, who says it's so important to teach your children about Nazirs? David?
Can I find two?
Sure, please find a way. Yes.
But
engage in fine-tuning.
The level of Kina. I think Kina applies to both of them.
Oh,
we know that because of Ben Torah Mora. We learned about it because, you know, the rabbi is Torah.
Right, again, but just, we don't want to get confused with that, because when you say, if you're looking at Ben Sarah Mora, so presumably that doesn't correlate to the chinuch we're talking about. It correlates to an issue in the broader chinuch where we said we're taking it as a given that mothers are for sure involved in. Right, the
so
breakdown...
Be a comment, no?
Not necessarily, that's not what we see here. Like, the breakdown in the chinuch process that Ben Sarah Mora represents is not a breakdown in making a 10-year-old sit in a sukkah. It's a breakdown in the whole educational process. So we for sure understand that, like you mentioned, is a very important opening caveat. There's no question that mothers are crucially involved in. So whatever we're talking about here is some subset of the broader idea, which involves very specifically and locally having children do mitzvos before they're obligated. Right? But not that that has nothing to do with Ben Sora Mora specific, at least not in the direct parallel. But okay, continue. Okay. That was your whole fine tunage. Okay, so I'm sorry to undermine your fine tunage. But it was a fine tunage despite my undermining. But okay, so let's run with it a little bit more. So Ariel, still focusing on this Nusser point, right? Okay, so that's definitely. So I think which is what Daniel was saying, right? Because it's not doesn't seem as necessarily an obligation to become a Nazir. And if that's the case, so then we don't have a reason to think that any parent should really be obligated to teach their child about Naziris in the practical sense, in the Talmud Torah sense, to teach them the concept, but to train them to become a Nazir doesn't seem really necessary if they could live happily, perfect, righteous lives without ever becoming a Nazir. Jacob?
Isn't there also an aspect of Naziris that's a negative?
Oh, excellent. So that would be the next step, right? Let's say more than that, that not only is it not something that we're all obligated to do, but it may even be a bad thing to do. There is a component of Naziris that we don't recommend, or that at least the Gemara seems to cast some kind of a negative light on. So it's one thing to say that for whatever reason, somehow within the Parsha of Chinuch, that the father can be Madar Beno B'Nazir, but maybe that's such a limited idea that there's no reason to involve the mother in that process. So maybe on that half of the equation, that even though the concept of Naziris applies pretty much equally to men and to women, still, as far as a parental notion of training the child in Naziris, maybe we could understand why that's kind of limited and the mother doesn't have a role. Now, parenthetically, before I take your questions, the Gemara is also going to imply that the chinuch is towards a son as opposed to a daughter, a father as opposed to a mother, and a son as opposed to a daughter, which is even harder to understand. And that we'll get that. That's what you're going to say, Harrison? Yeah, okay, sorry to cut you off. So that's also something which maybe correlates to something different about that sugya. And that's something that we'll have to keep in mind as well. Jacob?
In terms of the negative aspect of Naziris, why would the father be any different?
So I don't know yet if we can understand how to explain why it would be one parent over the other, except what we've suggested so far, is it may be part of the whole concept of Talmud Torah. But the first step is that it's simply limited, that this is not something that's a clear and present obligation that we say all hands on deck, and that this is something that every parent should be expected to have a role in, because it's not clear how much training in this mitzvah makes sense in the first place. So the first step would be simply limited without necessarily saying man versus woman. Now we could extend this. We mentioned one possibility last week that to say there's an obligation on the father specifically, maybe it could correlate to Talmud Torah, because that the Gemara Kedushin says that the father has the obligation of teaching the child Torah's content and the mother does not have the obligation. So maybe somehow it's included in that, that maybe somehow while the father is teaching Parshas Naso, is teaching the concept of Nazir, so somehow it's supportive of that to have him actually take on Naziris through the child. But it's a part of that limited obligation and isn't a necessity for raising a religious child, and therefore we don't have to bring the mother into the picture as far as that's concerned. Okay, so we're trying to contrast Nazir and Sukkah. So we just did, I think, very effectively illustrate how maybe Nazir could be an outlier in one direction. So what about Sukkah? Yes, Daniel.
Is it possible that you could say that our specific case of Sukkah is an exception because the father doesn't teach you that?
So that's what Tosi Shanim raised that issue about. But it's hard to say like that. Although it's not impossible. I mean, Tosus was there was assuming the opposite. There is a father somewhere behind the scenes who's not being mentioned. But the truth is, it's a reasonable point, right? We could say that, again, we're part of the broader effort to figure out why we would limit it in the first place, but maybe it's an obligation that rests primarily on one parent. And should the father not be around, then maybe it should shift to the mother. Maybe That is what our Gemara is talking about, assuming that we wanted to make such a distinction. It's interesting that the Tosfos Shonim and Yumim is part of what prompts the whole question, works kind of in the opposite direction, because there is definitely some logic to it. But let's try to focus on the mitzvah specifically. Is there a reason to say that sukkah is going to have, for whatever reason, a greater obligation that would include the mother as opposed to other mitzvahs? What do you think? Yeah, Sammy.
I was thinking, yes, based off what we learned earlier in the year, that mm-hmm. there's, you know, there are sources that we saw, let's say there's a certain element of osni to bring kedusha into the sukkah.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps maybe, you know, that's chalan as many people as possible, you know, men and children, whereas something like the zeros is not necessarily as much. It's just a one person job, kind of executing a certain number of halachos to fulfill that.
Okay. Interesting. It's a little bit broad, a little bit, maybe I'll be there, I'll address a little bit more. And if I wanted to expand on that, maybe I'd say that sukkah is more about an environment as opposed to a mitzvah or megavra, so to speak, like a nazir is. So therefore, I wouldn't necessarily focus on the kedusha part so much, but maybe that sukkah is an environment that's created by more people. It's a little bit overly broad. So what else could you perhaps suggest in sukkah? Yes, sir, Harrison.
Did we mention afim by sukkah?
No. Although it's a good question, why not? That's a whole... practically speaking, we don't have that. Maybe, you know, by the way, I was trying to think a little bit how many sukkahs we want to cover coming up. And so a lot of this is so many beautiful sugyas in this Masechta that both there are, just as we're seeing, tremendous shas sugyas in this Masechta that are relevant to Kol Torah Kula, and sugyas that are specifically sukkah oriented. So I was thinking, you know, last year we were learning Kiddushin, we're at the end of Kiddushin at the end of the year, and we had hopes of covering Kibbud Av Eim and Mitzvah Seishas Man Grama, but Kibbud Av Eim was such an involved topic that even though every single guy was here throughout all of June, but even with all of that, by the end of June, we hadn't really done so much of Mitzvah Seishas as Monogramma. So I'm thinking maybe we might want to spend some time on it this year, especially because it's behind the surface of all the mitzvahs of the entire Masechta Sukkah. It's about Mitzvah Seishas as Monogramma, Sukkah, Lulavim, and Esrog are all in that category, and therefore affect how women are obligated, and there are practices regarding sukkah and regarding Lulav and Esrog that differ. So maybe we'll put that on our agenda to go into more detail about that at some point. But as it is, no, we don't have a concept of Afhein Rai Boso Anez. In fact, some Rishonim maintain, I think we alluded to this the other day, that Afhein Rai Boso Anez only is applied, not all Rishonim agree with this, but some Rishonim maintain that Afhein is only applied to mitzvos derabanan, mitzvos derabanan themselves derabanan. Yes.
And say afim by sukkah, you also have to take a stand on machlokas of what the purpose of the sukkah is.
Maybe. I mean, kept that both of them presumably are applicable to women. So you could say it broadly and say that whatever the mitzvah is, whatever the nes is, it was one that was, whether it's Yes Mitzrayim or the sukkahs, that's what you're referring to, right?
But I know, but if you say that sukkah is just for sukkahs mamish,
right,
then it's not necessarily
nice. Oh, maybe. Specifically. No, but the... okay. I thought you were saying who was involved, but not sure. But either way, it doesn't seem like we have a concept coming in here. So, what else could you note about sukkah? Let me ask you this. Yes, okay, Harrison.
It says sukkah is a mitzvah call. Essentially, you need to do.
So that's also going to take us in the wrong direction, probably. Or you're saying that if it's so easy... Okay, I don't know if you're about to say Xer Shava, Kal, Kalos, whatever, but not go in that direction at all. But let me ask you this question. Is there an equal attitude, would you say, to mitzvah sa'asei and mitzvah lo sa'asei?
No.
Why not? Well, we haven't fully seen this yet, but we've seen a little bit of a hint You know, that part of the question that we started off with on day one of this sugya was the issue of katan ochel nevelos bezdin or avu mitzuvim hafrisho. There's a notion of hafrasha from iser, and there is also a notion of chinuch. As we mentioned, that these two concepts, even though they clearly overlap, they clearly address similar territory, may not be the same thing. And that the sugyas don't necessarily seem to draw on each other. So what if we have a concept of hafrasha from iser that was distinct from the concept of chinuch? So chinuch is about making the child do positive mitzvos, and maybe the mother has to do that, maybe she doesn't. But if the child's doing something wrong, so then that's a different story. Then we have to stop them from doing something wrong, and the mother is equally relevant to that. Now you'll say, okay, well, that's nice. What in the world does that guy do with sukkah? Sukkah is a mitzvah saseh. Right? Is that what you said, Alex?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a positive mitzvah. So is there any way we could see it as somehow fitting the rubric of a negative mitzvah? Alex?
If you say that eating outside the sukkah is bitul mitzvah, so then it's negative.
So there's some who suggest exactly like that. So if you look in the Avnei Nezer and his Chuvas, Sach Chava Rebbe, and Or HaChaim and Tav Pei Aleph, or if you look in the Aruch Lener, over here in Sukkah, in that base, or if you look at both, or if you look at one and then the other, however you decide to do this. So you may find such a notion, right, that Sukkah, yes, technically speaking, it's categorized as a mitzvah saseh. But the unique aspect of how it plays out is that essentially we treat it like a lo saseh. Because usually it involves, especially after the first day, more of an active negation. That you see somebody eating outside the sukkah on sukkahs, you say to them, oh, that's a no-no. But other than that, regardless of how the mitzvah is actually formulated, it doesn't hit us in the same way. So the Avnei Nezer and others suggest like this, that maybe it's ke'en and iser. That eating outside the sukkah is like a prohibited act, and therefore the mother is responsible to prevent that from happening. Now, apparently, again, on the level midrabanan, which is itself interesting, it should just mention that the sugyas and yivamas, which I think you saw on Kufi Dalet and Gemara's elsewhere, when the Gemara talks about not feeding a katan something that's asur, so there it sounds very much like that's an isur daraisa. Now here, whatever's going on, the Gemara seems to say it's drabanan, so there might be room to say, well, this isn't chinuch, this is hafrasha from isur. But it does seem like one way or another the Gemara is telling us it's a drabanan. Okay, but that's how some suggest that maybe there is a component of hafrasha from iser here. Shebadiah?
I thought that the distinction that we made between asas and lotas is that the lotas is we don't have to separate the child from...
Right, the Tosfos Shem and Yuma has that distinction. Right, so this is not working according to him. Right, he already tries to address... the Tosfos has their own answer to try to settle the issue, the conflict between his positions and this Gemara. So taking a different approach, not in line with that, that maybe this is about a more logical assumption that Hafresh and the Yisr is something more necessary than making active mitzvahs happen. And if that's the case, so maybe you should say that the mother is certainly obligated in that. There is another component you could say, and this is something that's going to lead us into a different discussion, which we'll come back to, but maybe it's about not necessarily them doing something wrong and eating out of the sukkah, But maybe eating out of the sukkah, literally, were they all on a park bench somewhere, that would have been better. Why? What am I getting at? Let's zero in again on what was happening in this story. Right, this all came off of the sugya of sukkah that's too high, it's more than 20 amos. So the question was, why was Hilni Amalka sitting on sukkahs with her sons in a sukkah that was too high? Is it possible to say that that would be worse than Hilni Amalka sitting on sukkahs with her sons eating outside on a park bench? Ariel, why?
So you want to get a false impression of the mitzvah and think that this is a proper sukkah.
Okay, so maybe that's the concern. And that's how some achronim suggest also. Right? That maybe what's wrong here is that it's not that she's obligating the chinuch in the full sense. It's not her responsibility necessarily to make sure that her sons are eating in a sukkah. But once they're eating in a sukkah, if it has all the trappings of a sukkah and the sukkah is not kosher, maybe in a sense that's worse. So that's going to provoke a question about the whole nature of chinuch that we will come back to, God willing, in a minute. So with that introduction, so let's also now connect to what we started with last time, that there is a major machlokas harishonim. Upon whom does the obligation of chinuch devolve? Is the obligation on the father as opposed to the child? Right, in which case we should say that the child is not really considered to be mechuyev in mitzvos drabbanon. That the notion of chinuch drabbanon means that the father has an obligation drabbanon to make the children do mitzvot. But there's no status of chiyuv on the children, which, as we mentioned last time, is appealing for two reasons. One more absolute than the other. One is to say that there's no possibility of being mechayev the child, because if, synergy back to our previous topic, if the mechayev of mitzvahs derabbanan is all from lo saser, so if your child is not obligated in mitzvahs at all, and thus not obligated in lo saser, so then how can they become obligated in dinim drabbanan? So because of a lack of platform there, we have to say the obligation is on the parents, in this case on the father. Alternatively, we could say, a little bit less out of necessity but just out of thematic relevance, that the nature of the mitzvah is the father, who's the adult and the knowledgeable one, conveying information, to conveying training to the child. Therefore, it makes sense to say that the obligation is on the parent. And therefore, the chi of mitzvah is on the parent rather than the child. So, however you come to it, we have a number of Rishonim who seem to understand like that, that the mitzvah is on the child rather than on the parent rather than the child. Who were among the Rishonim who said like that? Rashi, right? Rashi and Brachos. Who else? The Ran quoting the Ramban, right? And perhaps the Rambam. The Rambam gave us conflicting impressions, and the Kesef Mishnah read at least one Rambam that way, that the mitzvah is on the parents. Alternatively, other Rishonim hold that the child himself is mechuyev mitzvos, such as Tosfos. Right? You recall that Tosfos says the reason a child cannot be motzi an adult, even in a mitzvah derabbanan, is because it's just a greater remove. The parent is obligated in the mitzvah d'rabbanan, and the child is obligated from two d'rabbanans. You know, the mitzvah itself was d'rabbanan, and the chinuch is d'rabbanan, so it's a step removed. But not like these Rishonim we mentioned before, who just said, no, the child can't be motzi the adult, because the child's not mechuyav b'davar in the first place. So if you say the child is mechuyav b'davar, so let's think about this for a second. What makes the most sense to say? That according to the first opinion, the father is obligated, and not the child? And according to the second position, the child is obligated and not the father? Does that make sense? What's a little bit unproven and perhaps unlikely about that sentence? Harrison?
It's kind of hard to understand how the child would be responsible for his own, you know.
That's a part of it. Then take it a little further.
It feels like it's like the parent is required in order to do the, or some other person.
Okay, okay. So let's work with that. Do you want to comment on that?
Can the second opinion be more logical if you don't have someone to be in the chanuch you and therefore fall on?
Okay, but then the question is, can the child still be expected to fill in the slack over there? We'll say a little bit more about that. But what I'm getting at here, and Harrison kind of took us a little bit part of the way there, is that, okay, it's a machlokus rishonim about whether a child can be considered mechuyav in the mitzvah. That's a machlokus. So according to one opinion, yes, according to one opinion, no. So if you say no, so fine, the child is not mechuyav, the chiyav is on the father. But if you say yes, right, what doesn't follow? It doesn't follow just because you say a child can be mechuyav in the mitzvah and is, that the father's not, right? That's not necessarily the alternative. So presumably, the two choices are, the chiyav is just on the father, or the chiyav is on the father and on the child. So now let me ask you the following question. If you say the chiyuv is on the father and on the child, is it the same mitzvah that they share? Or are there two different obligations then? What would you say? And could it be that there are two different aspects of chinuch that are being suggested here? What would you say? So let me help you out a little bit, and we'll see. We'll say a little bit more, and then we'll have to maybe take this to a next level tomorrow. What is the purpose of chinuch? What is chinuch there for? We've seen a little bit in our previous discussions that there could be more than one purpose. Yes, David?
To regulate someone to be familiar with.
Okay, so regulate, so you're adapting the Hebrew word of rogil to regulate, right? So to make the, which is cool, we approve. Sorry, yes, no, we approve. But just to make sure we got our language precise. So it could be that the child needs to be habituated in mitzvos, and it's not reasonable to expect that he's going to turn 13 and all of a sudden flip from somebody who's never heard of mitzvos to somebody who's fully obligated. Or what was the other possibility? Jebediah? Okay, well, that's the other aspect of the training. Right? But one aspect, together with those training things, you also mentioned, right, we drew the comparison to Summa. Right, that what? That, right, you have to, a Jewish person should be involved in mitzvos. So maybe there's two different things going on here. There's the father's obligation to teach the child mitzvos, and there is the notion that the child, as a Jewish person, should be doing mitzvos, and therefore mitzvos are shaykh to him. David?
Is it okay to make a third category on what Jed said?
No, we have a limit of two categories per here. You can apply for an extension. You know what? Because you asked nicely, we'll let you do it.
To divide the first one into two, mm-hmm. because the emphasis is, what I said was on the child, that the child shouldn't come to Bar Mitzvah and then, you know, be expected to do all these things the perfect way.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is, the other side is that the emphasis is on the father has an obligation to teach a child. Is that valid?
Yes. It is valid. So it won't necessarily affect us here. So we could put both of those on one side. And then still ask the question, the child maybe comes at it from then a third direction. Yisrael?
So just according to the second possibility of that a Jewish person should be chayav in mitzvah, how are we expecting the child to just be born and then know how to do the mitzvah?
Oh, we're not. Practically speaking, it doesn't make sense. But what if you say like this, and this is an approach I think you see like this in some acronym, whether it's exactly like this or it's close enough. But what if you say like this? There's an obligation on the father to train the child to do mitzvahs. That's one part of what we call chinuch. Now, just to keep our language clear, right, we started off today by noting that there's lowercase ches and a bigger uppercase ches and the like. So now, just to keep our focus on this point, for the purposes of what we've talked about today, and only today, chinuch equals, the definition of the word chinuch equals a child performing mitzvahs. Right? So that concept, and the reason I'm saying this is because it could get separated from that general theme. So let's just clarify what we're talking about. We're talking about the notion of a child doing mitzvahs, that's our sugya today. That could come from two directions. One, it could come from the father's need to educate the child so that he will be fully familiar when he grows up. Or it could come from the general understanding that a Jewish person should not be without any mitzvah. The notion of a Jewish person who has no mitzvah obligation is problematic for us. And like we said last time, it's not a problem when it comes to an Isha, because an Isha is obligated in many other mitzvahs. So we wouldn't have a need to impose rabbinical obligations on women towards mitzvahs that they don't have a Torah obligation. Let's say the small minority of mitzvahs that are mitzvah seisha zman grama, we don't find that women are chayavos drabanan. Because it's not necessary, because they're Jewish through everything else they do. But a katan who may have no obligations at all, so we need to have some kind of mitzvah performance so that they should be understood as being Jewish. Now, just parenthetically, and this is a major issue, la halacha, did any of you guys get to the Truma Sedeshin today on the course, because you'll see this tomorrow. So what if you have somebody who is pater from mitzvos, like a katan, but is not expected to ever be chayav in mitzvos? Right? Like, let's say somebody who is in the category the halacha calls a shota or cheresh, which is presumably different from our contemporary cheresh, doesn't simply mean somebody who's deaf, but somebody who's ineducable. Right, so if somebody, for reasons of das, for reasons of mental disability, is not chayiv in mitzvos, is there a chiyuv chinuch? See, that is affected by this question, right? And this has huge halachic implications, right? Because very often, it's necessary for a person to be in an institution. So does it have to be an institution that serves kosher food? Which obviously involves a very significant challenge that's not always there for non-kosher food. It's a major issue posts can talk about. Is there a concept that no one should be separated from mitzvahs completely? So what if we say that when it comes to a katan, we have two components of chinuch? Again, chinuch meaning obligation and mitzvahs before adulthood. One is the father has a specific chiyuv to train the children. And two is that the child should do mitzvahs because a Jewish child should be doing mitzvahs. Yes, sir?
I presume that he's on a katan.
Yes, and that's what makes the katan mechuyev. So then, perhaps we could say, I believe there's some, I think the Beryl Pavarsky perhaps says something like this in the Sefer Bad Kodesh, that the obligation to train a child in mitzvahs, it's an extension of Talmud Torah, or for whatever reason, and that's a chiv on the father specific. But the obligation that the child should be doing mitzvahs, it's not right that a Jewish child should not have any mitzvahs. So who was it? I think Harrison said a minute ago, somebody in the back said, okay, so the child's going to do mitzvahs, but he's going to figure it out all on his own? How can we expect the child to do mitzvahs when, by definition, the child is young and no one's teaching him about it, no one's helping them? So if you say the child has a personal obligation to be doing mitzvahs, it's clearly necessary, and we could call this, to go back to our literal day one of the Zman, if we want to use language like mitzvah and hechsher mitzvah maybe, but it's just practically necessary that somebody is going to help him out. So that helping out is a parental obligation that presumably is equal with both parents. Now you have a child growing up in a household and we expect this child to be practicing mitzvos. So who is going to make sure that this child even has the possibility of doing that? So presumably both parents have that obligation. So theoretically that could be an explanation between the different sugyas. That the concept, for example, the Gemara Maseches Nazir, of actively training a child to do mitzvahs, yeah, that's on the father. But the notion that a child should be on their own, and so to speak, fulfilling mitzvahs like sukkah, so how are they going to figure that out on their own? How's that going to happen? So the parents have to be on top of that, and that means equally the father and the mother. And therefore, in our Gemara, we're talking about the mother making sure that the children, their sons, are fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah. Hi.
So is that thing that that sort of hechsher thing right there, mm-hmm. that the mother and father are both equally chayiv, does that have to do with the katan's obligation to look Jewish?
It could be, yeah.
I mean, separate from that.
You could probably explain it other ways too, but it works that way. And it works to say that the child has to be Jewish and has to, therefore, to the extent that it makes sense. Now, we could get more technical about this. So we could say that there's a difference between a full-fledged chiv in mitzvos, a connection in mitzvos through commandment in its fullest sense, which requires das, and the katan does not have das, and the overall relevance of mitzvos, which is still there even if one does not have das. So a child may not have the das to be obligated in the technical sense, but the broader concept that he should be a part of what the Jewish people do, so that there is room to say. Is that because, as we've been saying till now, to look Jewish, is it something else, however you want to phrase it, but it works for that. Yisrael.
So is the main idea based on the fact that we want a child to perform mitzvahs to be, because we want him to be a Jewish person, and because of that, there's a chiyuv required on the parents, because how else do we expect the child to do that?
Yeah, that it's more like a hechsher mitzvah kind of thing, that really it's all about the child doing the mitzvah, but it's not shayach, he's going to do the mitzvah without the parents helping out. So then that's a parental role, which maybe you'll call it a hechsher mitzvah. It's just a clearly necessary step in order for this to happen.
Is that the same thing like we said before about bris mila, or is it a different mechanic?
Well, bris mila we saw exists on a couple different levels. So if we want to, maybe we can compare it to one of the stages, not necessarily the father stage, right? Okay, so this possible duality here, this could have an impact on a number of other crucial chinuchian ideas So maybe we will have to pick up on that tomorrow. Any questions about what we said so far today? I just recap the highlights. Yes?
Is Arisugi assuming that there was no father in the case of the lung?
Well, Tosus was, as we heard that issue before, Tosus, Yushanim, and Yuma was assuming there must have been. And somebody else suggested this morning, which I think Daniel suggested, which has a sort of logic to it, it just isn't clearly the case, necessarily, that maybe when there's no father, the mother has to step in, and maybe there is no father. But again, it's a textual question whether that's true or not. So Tosus and Yushanim, was explicitly saying that there was a father on the scene. So just to recap the highlights, so we spoke a little bit more about this question of whether the mother is obligated and the contrast between the sugya in Nazir and the sugya in Sukkah. And we noted that it could be about drawing a distinction between mitzvos, but not the otherwise intuitive distinction of what mitzvah the parent is obligated in, because it's exactly the opposite of the fact. Women are shayach to Naziris, but are patur from Sukkah, but maybe it has to do with the level of obligation in the first place, that Nazir is not an actual chiyuv, and in fact is closer to a negative thing in some sources, so therefore maybe that's why it's a limited obligation. And when it comes to Sukkah, maybe we can go in the other direction and say Sukkah is more like a losaseh, and it's a losase in the sense that eating outside the sukkah is considered to be something wrong, and therefore everyone is obligated to be mafresh from isur. And a different spin, that maybe it's even worse than eating on a park bench outside, because maybe once they're in a sukkah, there is an obligation on the mother here to make sure that they don't misunderstand what a sukkah actually entails. And that's a point we're very much going to have to come back to. And then we discussed also the question that we mentioned the previous day about, is the obligation on the father or on the child? And we noted that if the obligation is on the child, then presumably that does not mean that it's not on the father. It means that it's both on the father and the child. And we noted that there are a couple of possibilities to what chinuch is about. Is chinuch to train the child in mitzvos, or is chinuch to make the person have some Jewish practice, like we find possibly by a Summa, and that could perhaps give us two different components. And we noted how that could also address the whole mother's role, that as far as the training, maybe the training is specifically an obligation on the father, but if there's also a chiyuv on the child to do mitzvos, it's clear the child's not going to be able to do that without any help from someone, and that help would have to come primarily from a parent, if not others, and the parents in this position are presumably equally obligated to provide that help. Okay, so we were all trained also to daven mincha, so we'll do that. Who would like to daven for us?
Daniel, daven for us?